when I see salt, which I haven't done for quite a few years, I am moved beyond the experience of having been involved in the film, because the experience was real. I mean, this wasn't just a fantasy. This was a real story, and these were real people. And the thing that is amazing to me is that while not all the problems that this film discusses, the personal and the intimate as well as the political and the economic, nothing much changes. And what is sad, in a way, is that many of the people in this picture are no longer alive, and when I see the picture, I relive something that happened 40-odd years ago. I would like to tell you something of the nature of this project and what happened, why this came about, which many of you may or may not are aware of. The politics of the United States at about the time the film was made was a very complex and complicated situation. Under the Truman administration, shortly after the explosion of the bomb over Japan, the United States became much more defensive as regards its former allies in the Soviet Union. And there was a lot of stress and strain in Washington under the Truman administration, which was basically essentially a liberal administration, I think. And Truman himself was, I think, a libertarian. But under the pressure of the politics of Europe at that time, the end of the war, and the fact that we did not want to concede very much to the Soviet Union, there was a tendency not only to become aggressive toward the demands of the Soviet Union, which had at one point had fairly equal claims with Great Britain on the United States during the actual war and at the point of the invasion of Europe. And what happened, I believe, was that a loyalty program was instituted under the Truman administration, which is very hard for most people to believe, but it did happen. And there began a series of events which ran from 1946-47 until the time of this picture and beyond. This picture was made in 1952-53. It was released, as you saw, in 1953. Hollywood, which was a major contributor to the education of the American people in some respects, found itself in a new environment in which the politics of the country was under investigation. We were moving from the war in Europe and Asia into an expansion of our demands upon Asiatic countries, namely Korea and eventually Vietnam. And I believe that those events, which were economically and as well as politically orchestrated, was responsible for the turnabout in the politics of this country, which caused people who made pictures like Salt of the Earth, or people who wrote certain kinds of books, or spoke in public arenas on certain questions of social and political importance, were boycotted or blacklisted, which was a common term, or even jailed. And I won't go into all, I couldn't in the short time that I would have to talk to you, simply to tell you that Salt of the Earth was an outgrowth of that period dramatically. First of all, the director, Mr. Biberman, spent 11 months in prison in a group called the Hollywood 10. They were mostly writers, some directors, some writer-directors, who were incarcerated because they refused to testify before the Un-American Activities Committee of the United States Congress. They stood by what they thought were their legal rights under the Constitution and refused to humble themselves nor to castigate their fellow colleagues. Whereas there were a large number of people who found it convenient and necessary to survive to become squealers and to point the finger at colleagues whom they were either had some jealous factor, either professionally or for some other reasons. Obviously, in the time we have here, the phenomena of the blacklist was a time in this country which has not really been exposed or examined very carefully to the younger generations. And I think this is something that yet has to be done or should be done. Salt of the Earth was an outgrowth of a situation in which three men principally were confronted by their non-employability in the Hollywood scene. The director, Mr. Biberman, had begun his career as a director of the Theatre Guild in New York, and he went to Hollywood in the late 30s, early 40s, and began to direct what were then known as secondary pictures. I mean, they were not big pictures. They were secondary in terms of their budget, and probably secondary in terms of their thematic material. And for some reason, none of those pictures have been sustained by time. But what happened was that he was charged by various colleagues, as well as government organizations, of having political affiliations to the left, which meant, in effect, pro-communist. Whether he did or he didn't, I really don't know, and I don't think that's important in a free society. What happened was that Paul Jericho, the producer of the film, who does survive today and lives in Beverly Hills, is a man high in his 80s, was a screenwriter for Howard Hughes. And he made approximately $2,000 a week as a screenwriter. And I guess he thought that's what he would be doing for the rest of his life. Then the other person, the other part of the trilogy, of the trio, was a man named Wilson, Mike Wilson, who had the previous year, in 1951, had won the Academy Award as a screenwriter for a film called A Place in the Sun. They were three very interesting, sophisticated, and complex men. And when they found themselves unemployable by Hollywood desert, shall we say, the reason I put it that way is that Hollywood had reached the point where in order to function, in order to operate within the system, it felt it was obliged, because many of its people were being called before Un-American Activities Committees of one kind or another. This was even before McCarthy and his time. I mean, McCarthy came in quite soon after, but there was a lot of problems, and Hollywood has never, in my opinion, I'm still fairly well connected with the Hollywood scene. They've never been appreciated for their candor and courage. But at that time, they didn't like the idea of being surrounded by people who had been charged with being un-Americans in the Congress of the United States. And so these three men became unemployable. By the same token, a vast number of people in every form, in every area of the creative, in the creative community of Hollywood, where motion pictures were being made by the hundreds or thousands, many people became unemployable simply by being charged before Un-American Activities Committee They were charged without further investigation, without any examination of whether they were right or whether they were wrong, and whether they spoke with this, with the justification of the Constitution of the United States. Many people were punished severely in those days for reasons which were totally inappropriate, un-American, and unfortunate. I had come out to Hollywood. I'd been offered a job by Sol Lesser and Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., to work on a film with Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton called Limelight. And it was my first production job. I was head of the studio operations in Culver City. And when that work was completed, and there was some other work which we did too at that, roughly at that same time, I realized the studio was going to be sold, and I had, in a sense, lost my job, and I just brought my family out to Hollywood, so I wasn't prepared to run back to New York. I was beginning to think of other work, and one day I received a telephone call from an unidentifiable person who said to me, "We understand you might be available for a new assignment." And I said, "What kind?" And he said, "It's a labor film, and we're going to shoot this picture in New Mexico." I said, "Is there a screenplay? What do you want from me?" And they said, we're prepared to offer you a job as a production executive, manager, and assistant director, and which are good jobs in terms of the Hollywood hierarchy. But I said, "Is there a screenplay? Can I read a screenplay?" And he said, "We have one. Why don't you come on over?" I don't remember who that person was to this day, but I went over, took the script, brought it home, sat up all night and read it and handed it to my wife, who then sat up the next rest of the day and read it again, and the two of us sat down and talked. And I said, "I'm going to do it." And she said, "They'll kill you. They'll absolutely kill you. This is the most revolutionary and radical film that Hollywood has ever made. And in the light of The Blacklist, and in the light of red baiting and all the garbage that was taking place in Hollywood at that point, they said, Salt of the Earth will kill you." Well, I must have been very hungry, because I decided to risk it. And after I see this picture today, which I haven't seen now in quite some years, I'm pleased that I took the risk. It was an extraordinary experience, and I don't think very many people ever, I would say, I correct myself, I don't think anyone ever making a film in this country ever had an experience as did the cast and company that made Salt of the Earth. We were surrounded by a community that was alien. We were attacked on the floor of Congress. Howard Hughes, who owned one of the major studios, RKO Studio, asked that that the border be closed, and if anybody penetrated the border, that they be arrested. There were attempts made, and I won't go into the details, but I received a telephone call at one point as we were coming close to the end of the picture, that we were all going out in black boxes. And we had to enforce, at least I should say, that the union, the guild that you, the union that you saw functioning here, which is a real story, every bit of this was real, called the governor and said, "Unless there's a police protection for these people, and that protection begins tomorrow, there are 150 men out there, they're sworn to kill them." And I knew this, and I knew this was true. And the next day, we had 300 police there, armed to the teeth. You think we were an advanced army in Europe or Vietnam. But that was a hell of a way to make a movie. I have to tell you that it's very difficult to make films. It's not easy. It's extremely difficult when you're working with professional actors and non-professional performers. These people that you saw, who were obviously not professional actors, but members of a trade union, were very good, I believe, because they were motivated out of their own souls. What they had to say was true. And what they had to say about men and women, and certainly about their rights as labor, as workers, and their rights also as Mexican Americans in a society that valued people from all countries of the world. We're confronted, in a sense, I take the liberty of suggesting that some of that atmosphere seems to be returning in this country, which bothers me. And I've talked to many colleagues about it. Of course, Hollywood is not the place to talk about politics. I happen to have a project or two that I'm working on and may be able to produce in the next year. But when you talk to people about films, no matter what the subject matter may be, it may be all political, it may be scientific, it may be purely a social, sexual story, nobody wants to know about the politics of anything. Nobody wants to talk politics. They're only talking, if I may say, money. It's the only thing that counts, whether it'll pay off, whether it's a marketable enterprise. The events, when you saw the end of this picture, you saw the end of this picture when the people recovered their homes and they recovered their self-reliance and their defense of their own rights. And since this is a story of capital which had to eat its straw hat, so to speak, things happened. Normally when a picture is edited and made, and I must tell you that when a film is completed, there are a number of things that take place. One is it's generally scored by an orchestral group. The music has to be composed by a composer, and then it's scored so that you have a soundtrack, and you have to match the soundtrack to the voice track. And then you prepare titles. In this case, you saw only the titles of a very few people. They were largely the people who had already been blacklisted. Those of us who had not been legally, officially blacklisted, myself and quite a number of other people, including the camera crew and so on, our names do not appear on the film. Many years ago, I asked my colleagues, particularly the ones who literally control the property, that I felt that there should be new titles for this film. I said, there are too many people that have not been honored for the sacrifices they made. In motion pictures, generally speaking, you don't talk about sacrifices. Nobody sacrifices very much of anything, because they're extremely well paid. So they have nothing, they've not sacrificed very much. These people were not paid too much, but they placed their lives on the line. We were attacked from the first day of production and even before. We were attacked in every major newspaper and magazine in the United States. We were enemies of the Republic. Rosaura Revueltas, who came from Mexico, was of course a communist before she came to the United States. I mean, these are the charges which were made. We couldn't get a camera crew from any place. We had to create a camera crew out of New York. These were documentary people who had never shot a feature in their lives. They were wonderful people. I'm afraid they're all in the other world by now, but I had a feeling, and it will never be resolved, of course, and I will always, because my experience with this picture, there are very few films that I worked on where I really was ready to fight for a credit. This picture I wanted to have credits on, and I wanted the credits of quite a number of my colleagues. I felt they deserved it. They'd sacrificed and fought for it, and they deserved it. But there was no money, and the company simply struggled. I want to tell you that in the first year or a year and a half, I'm not certain, maybe not more than a year, when Salt was first released, there were 13 showings in the United States. Those showings lasted never more than one day. They were very often, as in the case of, for example, a major theater, theater on 86th Street in Lexington Avenue, if you know New York, Manhattan, that theater had a packed audience. The streets were jammed with people. And the film was never shown, and this occurred in many places, because the projectionists were pulled off the film. They received orders that they were to walk away. It was a very strange time, and whether things have changed that much in Hollywood today, I'm not prepared to say. But the point is that I wanted to just tell you that it took a long time for this film to be shown to Americans. It was shown, it was sneaked over the border into Mexico and Canada very quickly. It was shown in both countries, it was shown throughout Latin America, shown throughout Mexico with absolutely astonishingly brilliant applause. The same thing happened in France and Western Europe, and of course in the East, in the Soviet Union and in Poland and also in China and places of that nature. Salt became a very important motion picture. It was never an important motion picture in the United States of America. And today, while it is an excellent example of filmmaking for students of cinema, or even for ordinary people who simply want an experience of seeing how some human beings interact in a social, political, and sexual manner, Salt carries, I think, still an immense impact. And it is widely screened now through the universities, which pleases me very much indeed. And I have helped from time to time to introduce the subject and to encourage students and to encourage faculty to explore the subject of the film, because it seems to me it reflects the best part of the American scene, which, for reasons that we can't go into or shouldn't probably at this point, seems to have been lost somewhere along the line. That's why the story, I think, carries a great deal of weight, because it carries such an immense quality of integrity. In any event, the film today is now a collector's item, and I think it's probably shown as much as almost any other film that's been made in the country in the last 30 or 40 years. And I'm pleased to see that, glad to contribute to this discussion. Let me just tell you this.